Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. You can listen and subscribe to the show for free on Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Audible. For network or show information, visit BiteRadio.me. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Dr. Dorothy Susskind, and we will be talking about her work, as well as her book, Workplace Bullying, Finding Your Way to Big Tent Belonging. Workplace Bullying offers a comprehensive toolkit for managers and industry leaders who are committed to creating inclusive cultures by proactively addressing toxic behaviors that hinder innovation, fracture work communities, and force out top talent. Additionally, it serves as a lifeline for individuals who have experienced workplace abuse, providing them with guidance on how to navigate the trauma and regain their sense of self. In this book, Dorothy, an expert in education and counseling, skillfully weaves together real-life stories, characters, and settings to shed light on workplace bullying and its impact on individuals and organizations. Dorothy Susskind is a respected assistant professor in the Education and Counseling Department at Longwood University in Farmville, Virginia, with a focus on early literacy, behavior management, and women as change agents in their community, Dorothy brings a unique perspective to the issue of workplace bullying. She serves on the research team and executive board of the National Workplace Bullying Coalition, further solidifying her expertise in the field. For more information, you could visit Dorothy's website, which is www.dorothysusskind.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Dorothy to the show. Good day, Dorothy.
Oh, good day. It's so good to be here.
Thank you. And I am happy to have you with me to be able to talk about this important topic because it seems to be getting more and more prevalent in today's workplace, and it's something that we really need to talk about. So I'd like to start with, first, how did you become, and when did you become, you know, interested in this particular subject, the idea of workplace bullying?
Oh, yeah, that is such a good question. Well, I guess I originally became interested in the work. I would say I've always been someone that is, you know, fairly creative, think about things in a bit of a unique way. And so I've had a few of my own workplace bullying experiences, and I had one in particular that was just really deeply traumatic. And I, you know, as a researcher and a writer, I just wanted to understand it more. So I launched a research study because that's, you know, that's what we do as researchers when we want to understand, you know, what's unfolding. And I ended up interviewing people all over the world, collected the stories of, oh, my gosh, over 200 people across industries, states, countries, continents, and then coded their stories to have a deeper understanding of what workplace bullying is, why it unfolds, what we can do about it. And then the work has just really taken off from there.
Wow. So the experience of workplace bullying is global, you know, in the sense, did you find any areas or, you know, from geographically that were more or less, you know, did some countries address it in better ways than other countries?
Oh gosh, yeah, that's such a good question. I would say within the United States, we are really learning from our international neighbors. I also participate in the International Association of Workplace Bullying and Harassment. And one of the things that's interesting but also unfortunate is the United States is one of the only Western industrialized nations that doesn't have protective work legislation outside of protective class, like race and class and gender, and those things. And so we really lack a legal framework to address such behaviors. And there certainly are other places around the world that are doing a better job. And that is such a gift for us to be able to kind of see their example and learn from it. And as a research community, I've been very blessed. We are very internationally connected, so we have an opportunity to talk with each other. And really this past year, the International Association of Workplace Bullying and Harassment had their first conference, perhaps not their first, but I believe it was within the United States, and it was held in San Diego.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So let's kind of start to dig into the idea of, you know, and you just mentioned workplace bullying and harassment. So can you, you know, for the listeners, kind of give a, I guess, a textbook kind of definition regarding bullying and how it's different from harassment?
Yeah, that's that's such a good question. There are so many really strong definitions of bullying out there. The way I tend to define it is that, you know, workplace bullying or workplace abuse is really the degradation of a person's character through tools such as gossip and manipulation, sabotage, gaslighting, exclusion, ostracization, with the ultimate goal of making that employee feel like an outsider. Another way to think about that is to revoke her belonging to her work community, but often so tragically, it ends up revoking the belonging to ourselves, which is one of the reasons it is so incredibly detrimental. And I think it's important to remember that what workplace bullying is not, like, it is not a simple personality conflict, and it's not a one-off comment or teasing. It's certainly not a natural part of a competitive work environment. It really is this, gosh, just a career-altering, life-threatening assault on one's humanity. And I would say the other piece that's really important to think about is that oftentimes in the media, we think about workplace bullying as a person, like a bully. And though there is most often one individual that is leading the charge, those behaviors happen within the context of a culture. So I really think about workplace bullying more as a workplace culture problem. And in Europe, workplace bullying is often referred to as mobbing. And that is really a better way to describe it because it captures all the people that are involved in the damage.
Wow. So, I mean, and that's kind of, you know, I guess a really important distinction. I mean, awareness. That, you know, even though one individual may be kind of spearheading, the rest of the environment, you know, coworkers, you know, can contribute to it. Now, is not standing up, like if one sees bullying going on and, you know, it is, you know, against maybe one of your coworkers, how does one prevent oneself from being a part of the problem?
Oh, yeah, that's such a good question. So you're thinking about not the person that is being targeted, but the person that is witnessing the abuse?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, and that's a really big piece of it. It's very hard to stand up to bullying, and we know that one of the reasons that bully targets feel such deep pain is that people that they really thought like were their friends turn the other way. So as far as, you know, just some simple things, I think having some sentence stems to kind of remember. So when someone comes and says, hey, you know, June did these things, you know, and this is some gossip I've heard. It's just to say, you know, wow, that's not my experience. Like, you know, just that simple frame, you know, that's not my experience is a really good way to kind of put an end to it. There's lots of reasons, and we can talk about them, about why people join in. But there's an interesting kind of term that we refer to as common enemy intimacy. And sometimes people in the workplace, and it is certainly understandable as humans, want to belong. And one of the ways that it is not a productive way, but that people seek belonging is joining together by hating the same people, hence the term common enemy intimacy. So by ganging up on a person, it allows others to feel like they are part of a group. The other pieces really are more on the cultural level, where the organization itself starts to talk about and define workplace abuse, and then it is more evident when it's happening, because sometimes when it's unfolding, both the victim of the abuse and the witnesses of the abuse are not quite clear about what's transpiring.
Yeah, that's one of the basic places to start. What is the recognition that that's going on, and you know you have the bully and then the one who's being bullied. So what have you discovered are some of the motivations that a bully might have?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I would say first, it's helpful to kind of understand some of the reasons that people might be targeted, and I can talk a little bit about that. And before I share that, I want to be really clear that someone is never at fault. So the victim is never at fault for being bullied, but these are just some of the characteristics that sometimes put people in the hot seat. My own research shows that there are some personality traits of people that are targeted. Often we see these people, they have a, you know, a very strong sense of self. They're internally motivated. They don't need a lot of outside affirmation. They tend to be pretty uninterested in office politics. So they don't want to gossip. They don't want to be part of that common enemy intimacy that I mentioned before. They don't want to have the meeting before the meeting or the meeting after the meeting. They want to be upfront in communication. And they also really appreciate some independence and autonomy. And these types of characteristics can make people that feel a great need to control others. These personality characteristics can make these folks hard to control because they do have this strong sense of self. And that can be threatening to others. We also see that people that are targeted often are really experts in their field, and because they are experts, sometimes they have a fair amount of notoriety, and that can make others feel jealous or threatened, and so they lash out. People that are targeted tend to be very creative and innovative, so they ask a lot of questions, and not to be argumentative, but just like, hey, why do we do it this way, and what if we tried it this way instead, and that can be threatening to people that are very vested in the status quo. Kind of similarly, we see that people that are targeted, they want to push boundaries, maybe as researchers, research topics that make people uncomfortable, and that could be another reason for folks to lash out. And targets tend to be pretty highly productive too, and that can be threatening. And I would say lastly, we see that a lot of victims of workplace abuse end up being whistleblowers, and that's because these are very highly ethical employees. And so when they see something, they say something. And though we often talk in organizations about doing that, the unfortunate reality is when people talk, you know, speak up for justice, whether it is unethical behavior or illegal behavior, the most common ramification is retaliation.
Well, we know all of those characteristics or traits that you listed, from an employer's point of view, are like great qualities. You know, I mean, it's like, that is what one would think one would want in the whole, you know, employee base. You know, because as you're going through it, and I'm thinking, you know, back to my days as a manager, that it was like, you know, boy, yeah, I could see, you know, each of those, but each of them seems to be, you know, a positive organizational characteristic.
Oh my gosh, 100%. And we, you know, organizations that are the best places to work for do value these characteristics. And it really is in these institutions that have toxic cultures. And that goes back to that idea that bullying behaviors happen within a workplace cultural framework. It's really in organizations with a toxic culture that these traits are not something that they're looking for. And you are so right. What a shame. What a loss.
Yeah, absolutely. So when how would someone know, you know, if they are a bully? You know, what are some of the, you know, because you mentioned, you know, there are, you know, certain, I mean, it's not those, the kind of the one-off kind of thing or the, or typical, you know, organizational competition, you know, that, you know, is in the bullying. So what would be the point at which one would kind of recognize that it's kind of beyond that competition, that, you know, maybe some of my actions might be viewed or perceived as bullying?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. So often, the truth is we don't totally know the answer to that. We know that there's a very high percentage of people that share that they have been bullied or they have witnessed bullying. But when we ask the question, have you ever been a bully yourself? Very few people admit that. So is that because they don't see themselves as a bully? Is it because they don't want to admit they are bullied, they are bullying others? We're not 100% sure of the answer to that. We do know that people can be coached often, not always. So when you are in an organization, that is part of a manager's job very much, is that when someone is being reported as having toxic behaviors, to specifically talk to that person and give them support so that they can change those behaviors, very specific support.
Yeah, and I would think that it would be very important to focus on the behaviors versus the individual, you know, that it's, you know, it's kind of what you're doing or seeing that is improper, not that you're a bad person.
Right. No, absolutely. I think that's a really good point. We don't want to, you know, go about trying to change a toxic culture by shaming others. But with that said, there are times, often we see in toxic organizations or even another, you know, just organizations that are difficult to work in, that the types of people that get promoted to manager positions, or you know, that term is going to be different in different industries, are often people that either get promoted because they simply have been there a long time. And certainly longevity has its celebrations, but that alone is not a reason to move someone up and really can have dire consequences. And another thing that we see in toxic organizations is that the type of people that get promoted are really yes people. So whatever they're asked to do, they simply say yes, and they tend to not push back and not rock the boat. And so you just get this very, like, homogeneous thought pool that is running the institution, and that just keeps the cycle of toxicity going.
Yeah, I've seen, excuse me, when I was part of corporate America, that Peter principle kind of people rising to the highest level of incompetence, you know, and it's like, oh my goodness,
right,
you know,
right.
And it's for those who are, you know, very dedicated workers, that can be very discouraging, you know, when it comes to looking toward one's future within an organization.
Oh my goodness, yes, 100%. And it's hard to speak up against bullying, and it is even harder if you know that you won't have support for those that are above you.
Yeah. Now, do you recommend organizations have a particular kind of policy, a stated policy and process when it comes to addressing bullying behavior?
Oh, my goodness, yes, 100%. It's really important that there is a policy that is written and is shared. That's the other part that's so important, mm-hmm. about bullying behaviors and harassment behaviors. And when I talk and coach people that have been bullied in the workplace, because we don't have such legislation, like I mentioned earlier, within the United States, that's the first thing I say is, you know, look at your company handbook or rulebook. What does it say about bullying?
Yeah. So what are, can you explain to the listeners, what are some of the impacts both, well, on the bully, those being bullied, and the organization? What are just some of the, the negative impacts that behavior has?
Oh, yeah, gosh, 100%. That's a complex question. So if I was to start, but a really important question. I'm so glad you asked it. A lot of times when I will talk to organizations and they'll I don't understand why bullying is such a big deal and why I need to worry about it. Why is this person so upset? And even people that are being bullied, when they'll talk to their partner or their friends, their concerns will be somewhat dismissed, like, oh my goodness, it's not such a big deal, just get over it. And some of the frameworks that I think are helpful in understanding why bullying is so damaging, and this is, and I share this because when you are the one that's being targeted, it is really helpful and healing to have a name for what's happening. So I think one of the first things that that kind of unfolds in a bullying situation is it's really a type of degradation ceremony. And there was a gentleman named Harold Garfinkel who wrote about degradation ceremonies, not in reference to bullying, but he wrote an article called, I believe it was Conditions of a Successful Degradation Ceremony, back in the 50s. And really what his description was, which is exactly what we see, is you have a group that has very strict group norms, and you can kind of think about that as like very homogeneous thinking. And then you have someone that breaks those group norms, doing some of the things that I shared before. They are innovative. They call out bad behavior. They're very productive, you know, all really benevolent characteristics in the best of circumstance. And because of that, in order to bring that person under compliance, because those things are seen as threatening, they stigmatize that person. And if you've read any of, like, Goffman's work on stigmatization, that's basically what happens. And so it's no longer that that person is bad at their job. They are really painted as a bad person. And then so often when the person being bullied, like, reaches out to their manager or to human resources for help, they're, like, the pain and the trauma that they are incurring is completely dismissed. And it is also, unfortunately, not unusual for something called DARVO to unfold. And that is a term that Jennifer Fried first did research on and really coined the term. And that stands for deny, attack, reverse victim, and offender. So the person, the bullying is denied. The person is attacked for reporting the bullying. And then the target is actually blamed for the same behaviors that she is calling attention to. And then eventually that person, like I mentioned, is really pushed out of the community. And what that does is it, when you're the target of abuse, is that it completely shatters your assumptions. And there's a researcher named Janice Bullman who talked about that. She's a psychologist. And she says it really shatters our assumption that people are benevolent, that the world is predictable, that we ourselves are good and worthy. And within that shattering, we really incur, like, a moral injury. And there was a man, is a man named Jonathan Shea. He did this work originally on war veterans. And a moral injury is really this idea that there has been a betrayal of what is right by someone in authority in a high-stakes situation. And certainly losing your job is a high-stakes situation. And that is the general outcome, like as high as 70% of people that are targeted. And then you are left with this sense of ambiguous loss. And a woman named Pauline Boss has done a lot of research on that. And we say ambiguous loss because it's like a metaphorical death where there is no closure because nobody has acknowledged what happened to you. There has been no repercussions for the deplorable behavior of those that bullied you. And so often people in bullying situations are asked to sign NDAs or non-disclosure agreements in exchange for very small severances. And so then they're not even allowed to tell their story. And so often they're losing their job. They're not able to tell their story. At this very moment when, of course, losing your job, you are losing your health insurance. And people have significant health consequences from workplace bullying, things like high blood pressure, heart palpitations, sleep trouble, hair loss, withdrawal, migraines, PTSD, suicidal ideations. And without a doubt, the most difficult interviews I do is when I'm talking with a parent of an adult child or a partner of someone that's taken their life because they have been bullied. And these are people that have been bullied and have asked for help repeatedly from their organization, and that organization completely looked the other way.
Yeah, that would be devastating, and I am sure. excuse me, Dorothy, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take a quick break. And then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about workplace bullying, and then maybe, you know, generalize a little bit, because, you know, even though, you know, your book and the topic is workplace bullying, we see it in everyday life, you know, and there's a lot going on socially, you know, with that kind of thing. So I kind of want to get your take on that as well, okay?
Sure, that sounds great.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today, my special guest is Dr. Dorothy Susskind, and we've been talking about her work as well as her book, Workplace Bullying, Finding Your Way to Big Tent Belonging. And again, you can find out more by visiting Dorothy's website, www.dorothysusskind.com. And on there, you'll be able to find out also more about the services that she has to offer. Okay, with that, we're back, Dorothy.
Yes, I'm so happy to be back.
Great, thank you. So in your book, there is one section called Reclaiming Your Narrative, Post-Traumatic Growth After Trauma. So for those who are listening who either have recently or are even currently experiencing the bullying behaviors of those around them, the idea of reclaiming one's narrative, can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I would say kind of the first step on that, because like I mentioned earlier, so often why workplace bullying is so detrimental is because someone kind of took your story and hijacked it and painted you as someone that you do not believe yourself to be. So there is this great loss of self. So part of it is like finding that beautiful piece of yourself again, because it's not lost. It's just kind of sleeping at the moment. So I would say the first step that is incredibly helpful is for people just to understand the cycle of what happened to them. And I can't tell you how often I'll be talking with someone and they'll be like, oh my gosh, you will never believe what happened next. And I'm like, I will totally believe it, and I bet I could tell you what happened next. Because it's so nonsensical when you are in the moment, but it is actually very predictable. So, you know, a couple things are just, you know, super briefly, knowing the typical, like, unfolding. And I usually think about you've got a person that is targeted for those reasons we talked about before, calling out bad behavior, being creative. And then there is this jealousy and battle plan. And so often the bully will pretend to be friends with the person that she's targeting, and that will encourage the person that is being targeted to disclose personal information that will be used against them at another time. And then that third step I'll often say is like the precipitating event, and it is 100% not the cause, but it's really used as the reason that the bully will start to rally the troops. So maybe someone had a great marketing campaign or got a big grant or a recognition, a job promotion, and so the bully will start kind of like, you know, kind of dropping seeds of doubt, like, because, you know, this happened to Dorothy and she got this big recognition, this is going to hurt our jobs or something crazy like that. And then like that fourth stage is there's like this underground battle, and that's really like this lunchtime gossip. And it's not unusual at all, if you can believe it, for the bully to go to HR and start to say, gosh, I'm really worried about so-and-so, and also the bully to reach out to her boss to kind of cover her tracks. And then that next stage, that stage five, is really that attack and mobbing. And at that point, the bully will often go back to HR, ask for the victim to be put on a PIP or a performance improvement plan. And that is devastating because, remember, targets are usually top performers, have been in the industry for decades. So it's ludicrous you would be on a performance improvement plan. And the demands are often unreasonable. At this point, bystanders have joined in. You're being completely ostracized. And then that last stage is really that final resignation. And often, unfortunately, like I said before, the victim will lose her job and the organization will engage in a fairly significant cover-up, and the target will suffer health consequences. So I would say that first part is just really like understanding, you know, what happened. And then what do you do next? There was a gentleman named Michael White, who unfortunately died way too early, and he really talks about this opportunity to rewrite your narrative, and rewrite your narrative in a way that you are reclaiming those difficult parts where you stood for the hard right against the easy wrong, and celebrate your strengths. If you think about the bullying, like a year's time might have 1,000 events that happen, and sometimes just our mind connects those events in one path across the page, but there would be other paths to connect the events as well. And so this is an opportunity to say, hey, these are all the amazing things I did. Another thing that's really helpful is hard, and I would always suggest if you can do it with a coach or probably even better, a therapist, but to create a timeline. Mm-hmm. We know that trauma is stored in our senses. It's not stored in a linear fashion like other memories, and so it can be really hard to conceptualize in a concrete way. So creating a timeline on paper can be really helpful. There, another thing that can be invaluable is to consider what was violated. So, like, what was it that was violated? Where did the moral injury come from? And it might be a sense of fair play, a sense of courage, a sense of doing what's right. So often we see that bullying takes place in helping organizations, so in K-12 schools, hospitals, higher education, in nonprofits, in places where you're like, oh my gosh, people are working towards a mission to protect and serve others, and when that mission is violated, it can just be soul-crushing. And then I would also say, at times we don't do a lot of rituals within the United States, but there's a lot of value in them. So almost having like a ceremony of rebirth where you write a letter and you say, you know, these are the things that I am going to disconnect from, the organizations, the events, the people, in order to move forward in a healthier way. And then perhaps burn the letter or something else ceremonial. And that can be really helpful too. And last but not least, I would say there is this just lovely research base called post-traumatic growth. And two men, Tadishi and Calhoun, originally did that work at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. And really what they saw is that even people that have been through great trauma can come out stronger than they were before. And one way to think about that is not that we forget what happened to us, because bullying changes you as a person permanently. It changes your brain. It changes your experiences. But there are ways to say, wow, this is what happened, and this is how I'm going to carry it in a new way. And often we'll see that unfold with post-traumatic growth or PTG, is that the person like finds new opportunities to give back. So maybe someone that was bullied starts to, you know, joins like the National Workplace Bullying Coalition and helps others. Second, we'll see that they often start to form a deeper connection with prior relationships, people that are really important in their family and friend group outside of their professional work environment. And they also forge new bonds with people that have suffered a similar trauma and can say, hey, I see you. I've been there too. And third, they have this lovely appreciation. They start to see their inner strength and how they overcame great obstacles. And fourth, they kind of develop this greater love and appreciation for life. You know, really seeing or prioritizing relationships over social status and, like, you know, the professional hierarchy. And I would say fifth and finally, kind of tap into something spiritual, seeing ourselves being part of something bigger. And that might be a religious connection, but it doesn't need to be. So those are some of the things that can be really helpful.
Yeah, you know, I have had many a guest who have used a traumatic experience as a launch into basically a whole new perspective of life, and, you know, really change things up, you know, as far as, you know, their participation in life. And, you know, it's, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people would say, well, I would really much rather have not gone through that. But, you know, that this, because of that, this is now, you know, how I view life, now how I view people, and how I view myself.
No, I so agree, and I think it's also, and I should have started with this, when we are just coming out of that bullying experience, it's really important to give ourselves and some time to grieve and really partner with a therapist, because it is a tremendous wound, like that moral wound and metaphorical death, to go through an abuse situation. So we don't want to say, okay, this happened, now I'm going to have post-traumatic growth. Like, you need to give yourself time to grieve, and then there's that opportunity to move forward in a new way.
Yeah, very much. Now, the subtitle of your workplace bullying book is Finding Your Way to Big Tent Belonging. So, you know, and I've heard, you know, the idea of big tent kind of being thrown around, you know, here and there, and many times it's in a political sense. I've heard it probably most. But can you talk a little bit about the idea of a big tent, you know, and, you know, what, you know, an organization or manager can do to facilitate that kind of belonging?
Oh, yeah, I love that question. I would say in my book, I kind of talk about this theory that I developed called closed circles versus big tent. And I really think about that bullying originates because people interpret, strive for, and maintain belonging differently. So I can, you know, some of the contrasts that will help you kind of see what does big tent look like. So people that are creating closed circles tend to believe in scarcity, value, power, and compliance. They see any kind of threat as something that they need to address immediately and through, you know, unfortunate means like gossip, retaliation, ostracization, gaslighting. In contrast, people that interpret belonging kind of in that big tent framework, they tend to really believe in abundance. So your success is a beautiful thing, and that in no way takes away from my success. That idea of, you know, you can keep lighting a candle without diminishing the flame. We also see, like, in big tent belonging, that there is this value and opportunity for autonomy in organizations, exploration, innovation, cross collaborations. In addition, I would say that some of the ways that we maintain belonging really differs if we're in an organization that is valuing a closed circle approach. A lot of times people will maintain belonging in closed circles by using humiliation, belittlement, sabotage, sneer campaigns. A lot of times the environment will have characteristics like if there's a strict hierarchy, homogeneous thinking, conflict avoidant. When something happens, there is this blame and shame instead of curiosity. In contrast, when we're in an organization and we're trying to craft this sense of big tent belonging, we really encourage intellectual risk-taking, deep reflection, empathetic care of each other. The environments, you have this sense of a flat hierarchy, not that there is no hierarchy because hierarchies are necessary, but that everyone has an opportunity to give feedback and that feedback is received in a productive way. Like I mentioned earlier, that people can collaborate with different groups. Often we say that people don't like problems, but I actually don't find that at all. Creatives and innovators love problems. They just want the autonomy in order to kind of solve them in new ways. So let people engage in problem solving and take intellectual risks and be really transparent in the kinds of things that they find. And I would say last for big tent belonging, when something happens, instead of sweeping it under the rug or trying to blame people or creating scapegoats, but just think, gosh, as a group, you know, people from different perspectives, different departments, different places on the hierarchy, we want some feedback and we want to get curious about why this happened so that we can prevent it from happening in the future. So big tent is really a cultural construct.
Yeah, well, very interesting. Yeah, the closed circles, you know, in, you know, versus, you know, Big Tent belonging. I mean, it's a good distinction. I mean, I'm so glad that you created that idea, you know, because I think that it helps people understand the dynamics, you know, that are involved. And you know, if you have an understanding, you know, then that's kind of the first step in awareness and being able to do and experience things differently.
And absolutely. And these, you know, interestingly enough, these kind of ideas of a closed circle versus a big tent, they're not just organizational issues. They're also, like, we see these same things in families, you know, that in friend groups. You know, how does your friend group or your family operate? Are they kind of taking that closed circle approach, or are they like, yes, everybody is welcome here?
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you did that. That was a wonderful transition into the, you know, what I kind of wanted to bring up next. Now, with family dynamics, I mean, that has to add a much more nuanced kind of approach when it comes to bullying. You know, and if it's a family dynamic that's gone on for generations, you know, then it's going to be, I would think, difficult to break the cycle, though you would want to, I would think.
Yes, no, absolutely. And families are so, so tough. I think whenever people are experiencing really difficult experiences within their family, that first step is really working in partnership with a therapist so that we ourselves have the clarity and the strength to address those things in our family unit. Oftentimes even bringing families into therapy that can be really helpful. And then another thing that I think is so often taboo in the United States is that we want to say, you know, that families, you know, family comes first. And that is a beautiful sentiment if you have a family that is supportive and healthy. But I think it is also important to hear people when they say that their family environment is damaging to them. And in those instances, either temporarily or sometimes unfortunately on a more permanent basis, if folks are not feeling a sense of belonging and are being attacked and ridiculed within their family, and it's significantly impacting their other relationships and their self-esteem and sense of self-worth, is to put up some boundaries. And boundaries can be misinterpreted so easily. Like, sometimes we'll think about boundaries as I'm trying to control my family or control others. And boundaries actually have nothing to do with control. And it really has nothing to do with the other people. It's like, this is what I need for me. And so I'm going to, you know, have some control over the access that I give other people. So I'm not trying to change my family, but I'm saying these are some things I'm going to need if you're going to come over for Thanksgiving dinner. And if you're not able to do these things, I understand. I'm not asking you to change, but I am saying that this is not going to be a good time for you to spend time with my family. So, you know, sometimes we have to restrict access when people can't act in ways that are healthy. And sometimes simply putting those boundaries up will allow families opportunities to be open to engaging in productive conversations and changing behaviors, and sometimes they don't. But, you know, as many of us have learned, there is great strength and lovely support networks in creating our own families, and sometimes our families are not simply the people that we have a genetic tie to.
Yep, very, very true. The biological versus the choice of family. So, you know, because I believe that your book and the information that you have can be applied beyond the workplace, social media is one area that is rife with bullying, you know, the idea of being anonymous and being able to bully. We've seen, unfortunately, you mentioned suicides. We've talking to a parent whose child is lost because of that. We've seen that happen time and again. What is your view of social media and bullying, and what can an observer of bullying do to help minimize or to lift up the one who is being bullied?
Oh gosh, that's a really good question. I would say first, I am someone that is not a huge social media person. I'm very private. So I think first, be really intentional about the social media spaces that you find productive. If you're using a social media platform and you feel pretty crummy each time you get off it, probably just get off it permanently. I think too, that whole idea of boundaries is really important, restricting access, and sometimes that's just emotional access. You might see something written about you, but you're like, well, I'm not going to read that. I would say, too, that arguing with people that are coming from attack mode is just not helpful. Engaging in arguments on social media, I don't think anyone should change their opinion because of some sassy comment we put back to someone. I want to be really clear on who I am as a person and how I want to show up in the world. And regardless of what someone might say, I'm not going to engage in that. If someone wants to say, wow, I'd like to talk to you about your research method and have you thought about this? And I think it would be great if you did this instead. And what about this avenue of exploration? Those are really fruitful conversations. And that's the kind of stuff I want to spend my time with. And also I think, places like LinkedIn, I find that really inspiring more so than other places professionally, because I can be very intentional about who I'm interacting with. And I think that there is a professionalism that I don't find other places.
Well, I agree completely. there is it's a very different feel, from that particular platform than the others. And I'll be joining you on LinkedIn.
Yes, I would love that, definitely.
That would be great. So we're kind of down to the end of the show, Dorothy. So is there any kind of final words or any perspective maybe that you might want to offer that we didn't cover that you'd like to tell the listeners?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard one. I would just say that if you are being bullied, how important it is to understand the cycle, to really understand your self-worth, and to create a network outside of your professional work organization. We need those people that are in our corner no matter what, whether it's our partner, our spouse, our friend group, our family, whoever those people might be. So, that relationships matter, and you don't need to have tons of them, but have two or three people that you can count on. I would say that is incredibly important. And the other piece is, like we talked about with post-traumatic growth, even when the worst thing happens to you, that there is a way with time, because these things do not happen overnight, to transform that tragedy into something beautiful and finding this whole new sense of our own self-worth, but also, helping other people. And I just truly believe, and it has been my experience, that by giving back and uplifting others, that we help and uplift ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Well, thank you for your time today, Dorothy. It has really been a joy and very informative. I've got all kinds of new perspectives and kind of terminology and all kinds of stuff kind of going through my brain right at the moment, and I appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. It's been such a pleasure. I learned so much by talking to people, so just thanks for, giving me the opportunity to talk with you today. It's really been a gift.
Great. Thank you very much, and I look forward to keeping in touch.
That sounds great. I'll count on it.
Okay. Okay, good. You have a good day now.
You too.
Thank you. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Dr. Dorothy Susskind, and we've been talking about her work and her book, Workplace Bullying, Finding Your Way to Big Tent Belonging. And again, you can find out more about Dorothy's book as well as the other services that she has to offer by visiting her website, which is www.dorothysusskind.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.